a million different things. So it's really about talking to the person and asking them. And I think there is kind of, when we deal with relationships, we think about equality and reciprocity. But when you start to add more than one person that you're relating with, it's not necessarily meeting the same needs for you, and you might not have the same time commitments or commitment to share resources. Mm-hmm. So people can and do have different relationships with the different people in their lives.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's say there's a polyamorous group, and one person has sex with another person to fulfill their sexual needs, but mm-hmm. then there's another person having their emotional needs met, and then there's another person having their intellectual needs met. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking about?
Kind of, but not really. So maybe we can give a little broader definition of polyamory and talk a little bit about how I conceptualize relationships, mm-hmm. if that would help. So can I give a couple more definitions
around go
what
ahead.
Polyamory is not? So some people do think it's all about sex. And so, So this, when you're talking about having sex with a lot of different people and sharing partners, that's more like swinging. So polyamory really focuses more on the love and the relationship. And love is kind of one of those nebulous words. And you can't really be in an intimate, loving, polyamorous relationship without sex. It's just friendship, really, right. then. But it does comprise. Okay, let me back up for a second. And the way dominant culture thinks of relationships is you have kind of an equal amount of this person's my best friend. They are going to be my sexual partner, and we're going to have like romance. So you got the intimacy, the romance, the sex, and that person has to meet all those needs. And the way I break it down is you can get those needs met by different people in different ways, or have someone who meets most of those needs. But a lot of people are polyamorous because, like you mentioned before, a need isn't getting met.
Okay.
So, like, for instance, a lot of people who are bisexual are also polyamorous. So about 50% of polyamorous people are bisexual. About a third of bisexual people are polyamorous.
Whoa, that's cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But, you know, when you're in a monogamous coupled relationship with someone of a certain gender, that by default means you are not having sex with people of other genders.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And if you're bi, that means you're missing out on
right.
half the population.
Right. Or if you're pansexual, then, you know, you're missing out on all sorts of other fun. Stuff. And pansexual, for those who don't know, is people who are attracted to people regardless of gender. So including transgender people, intersex people, etc.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yes.
So wait, this might be not maybe quite on the topic, but you brought up pansexual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've heard of pan and omni.
Yes.
What is the distinction between those? So I have like a better working definition.
Sure. So the way I think of it is pansexual means sex with humans of any gender. Omni means everything, right? So sex with everything. So when you think about things like tentacle porn or sex with aliens or some fantasy things, I could get more graphic. I don't know what kind of show this is. Sex with anything is omni.
Interesting. So I've never heard that definition.
If you're
like
a vegisexual like Bill the Cat in, what is it, Outland? Does anyone even remember that cartoon? Probably not. Never mind. I'm dating myself. Opus the Penguin, Bill the Cat? No?
No.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. So, yes, omnisexual.
All right.
But when I think about polyamory, there's really five crucial elements to being polyamorous. Of course, you've got the love. But a lot of people think, well, isn't that just cheating? You know, you're having sex with a lot of different people. That's cheating, right? Well, one of the core tenets of polyamory is that it's honest. It's consensual.
Mm.
So everyone knows what's going on and everyone's okay with what's going on. And this really, requires a radical degree of honesty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to be upfront with your partner about you're desiring someone else or your need isn't getting met. And that is one of the hardest conversations to have in a relationship, right? Because there's a huge chance that if I really tell my partner what I'm thinking and what I want, they might reject me. Mm-hmm. So a lot of work I do in therapy, especially with students, but adults too, is getting really honest about what you need and how to communicate that with your partner. And getting over that fear of I'm going to be rejected. Because usually when you're honest, if you can get through that initial discomfort, it brings you closer. Mm. So
definitely.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that fear comes from just being rejected. Does that fear also like come from other places, such as like fear of being of jealousy? Like, for example, if I get into a polyamorous relationship, that this other person will start to love me less.
Sure. And that is, you know, in our society, we've got this kind of zero sum game concept of love, where if you love me 100% and then you also love someone else, now you're loving me 50% and them 50%.
And then both of them are dissatisfied.
Unhappy.
Right. And that's not how love works. Right. There's a way that love is abundant, that the more you give, the more you get in return. And so it's a real big paradigm shift from deprivation of love to abundance of love. And I mean, this can really, you know, around money or other things in our lives too, this deprivation model of approaching life, like nothing good happens to me versus, yeah, life is awesome. let's do this thing, you know?
Is it kind of like a parent doesn't necessarily pick their favorite child?
Exactly.
Like, they don't just like, well, I can only love you so much because I have to love Jimmy over there.
Right.
Because he's our son.
Sure. So that's it. I mean, that's a very good analogy that parents love all their children. Parents love their children in different ways. You know, a child might be more like them, so they might get along with them or not, you know, or a child might be very different. It's like, who is this child? I don't understand them. So
that sounds exactly like my parents.
Right. Right. And
it's
then
like
there's
like a less cool version of my mom.
Yeah. And so, but back to, you know, some of the fears around it is, yeah, there's a huge fear that if you love someone else, you're not going to love me. Or why am I not enough? That's a big one. Why am I not enough? Why do you need someone else? And I think one of the myths of love that is perpetuated in our culture is this idea of finding the one, that one perfect person who's going to meet your every relational, sexual, companionship, intimate, activity, blah, 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 need. Impossible. I'm going to say it again. It is impossible to find one person. You can find someone who will meet most of those needs, but the rest is compromise, right? Or you do without. And so polyamory is really about, oh, wait, this person can't meet all my needs. So why am I asking them to meet something that they can't do and then getting resentful? I'm not going to use that word I'm not supposed to use, even though I want to. Being resentful or angry at them for withholding this thing that I want from me. You know, so there's a way that polyamory can go, you know, why don't I focus on what's good in this relationship? And if they can't do something that I need, I can get that need met elsewhere. You know, if my partner doesn't want to go to the opera with me, I'm not going to bug them until they're like, hate me for bugging them. I'm just find an opera buddy, right? Or substitute blank. If my partner doesn't want to have this kind of sex with me, my partner doesn't want to do this, that, or the other thing with me, you know.
So a lot before even considering that is just identifying what your needs are.
Yeah.
And figuring out what you want in a relationship.
Yes. And that's one of the other crucial elements of polyamory is that self-knowledge. And, you know, it's not really something we're taught to think about or ask for. It's there. It's all the time driving us. People act in some very... okay, this is not the technical term because I'm a psychologist, but in some pretty crazy ways to try and get their needs met. But it's crazy because we haven't actually identified what the need is. So we're just running around little emotional balls of mess because we don't know what it is we're actually trying to get. You know, so if we slow down and go, okay, what is this emotion really trying to tell me that I need? We can be much more effective in identifying what it is and then asking for it to get met. So communication is huge in polyamory. Like if you don't like to communicate, just don't even try it.
Don't even get to it.
No.
I feel like if it's pretty much anything, if you don't like to communicate, don't expect your relationships to go very well.
Right. Well, and that's another thing is I think a lot of relationships fail because people do have expectations, like a lot of expectations that never get named. And there's a way that monogamy, there's kind of this culturally accepted expectation. We're going to be together and not really have friends maybe outside of us. And we're going to do everything together. I mean, everyone has different expectations, certainly, but no one talks about them. We just assume the other person knows. So, you know, this whole thing of every polyamorous person has a different version of polyamory. I think the same can be said of monogamy. We just don't talk about it.
Huh.
Well, yeah. It's kind of like in relationships where people are like, oh, well, I find like, hanging out with my friends is very important, but then their partner's like, oh, well, then that means they're more important than me.
Right. Right. So you're getting into that zero-sum game again of why aren't I enough? Or someone who is super introverted and has an extrovert partner, for instance. Mm-hmm. Like the introverted person might be like, you know, I need an hour of alone time, like absolutely alone, no interaction, even with you, my most beloved, to feel good about the world and recharge. And the other person's like, no, you must be with me every moment. So there's a way, monogamous, polyamorous, whatever, it's like, okay, honey, have your alone time. I'm going to go out and do my thing. Doesn't mean I don't love you. Doesn't mean you don't love me. We're just acknowledging that we have different needs.
Yeah, it's definitely, I don't know. This also just like strikes me as a very, very unconventional. And like, it's not like it's a, I'm trying to say it's bad at all. I think it's really cool. But it's definitely just like a very, you have to change your mindset about how you look at it.
Saying, absolutely,
because you're saying it's like, oh, well, I'm gonna go, like, to me it's like my default is like, oh, well, if that's not, then it's, I have to I'm just trained to default to, well, then I'm not important enough if you have to go out and do something with someone else.
Right it can really feed into our insecurities of, does this person love me? And I think, you know, part of that too is there's this idea of possession of our partner. You know, till death do us part, I am yours, you are mine.
And that's it.
Right. And I mean, marriage originally was about property, right? I'm going to trade you this stuff, this dowry for your daughter there, and we're going to get married, and we're going to, it's like a business transaction. Now I get your land or whatever. I don't want to get into the whole history of it. but there's a way that a lot of polyamorous people are very self-possessed. There's this principle that I am my own person. You are your own person. I am responsible for my needs getting met. I am responsible for my emotional reactions to things. You know, and so here's the psychologist in me talking again. And this is a major paradigm shift that we often like to say, you made me so angry, or she made me so happy. No, other people cannot make us feel a certain way. They can certainly know our buttons and push them, but it's up to us to decide how we want to respond. And I think a lot of people give up their power and their self-agency by saying, oh, this other person made me feel that way. You know? So there's a blame game that goes on along there too. You don't have to take responsibility, right?
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
So I think this is a good time to move to a song break. Let's ruminate on what just happened. If you have any questions or you just want to give us a cool shout out, call us at 805-756-5277. That's 805 slow KCPR.
805 slow K ass, as I like to say. Stole that from Fudge Pack. I missed Fudge Pack tonight. Anyway, if you have a question, call us.
Also, we have our Facebook and Twitter and whatnot. All right.
I'll say no. Some 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 say no.
Listeners,
oh yeah,
that was Macintosh Plus, and the song you just heard was Risa Franku 420 / Gendai no Kyompu, which according to Google Translate translates to Computer of Lisa Frank 420 / Modern.
Glad you're getting on that Japanese studies.
Oh, thank wait, you. That's Japanese.
Yeah,
you said it with a German accent.
It was a I'm working on it.
you've heard too much of Professor Kelly's French.
Unfortunately.
You just want to like all the R's.
Of course.
Well, can we swear on the radio in French?
As far as I know, I don't really check which songs in different languages have swear words in such languages.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, I don't know. So the listeners probably don't know.
I will try to refrain from the swearing in French.
Okay. Do you know French?
Ouais. Un petit peu.
Mm. Nous bon. Parlons français.
Ah ouais?
Oui. We're not very good at this, listeners. So we have two announcements.
Shameless self-promotion hour right now.
First.
Courtesy of Sean Martinez.
On January 23rd. Actually, 22nd. On January 22nd from 7 to 9 p.m. in the library, room 511, Safer in the Gender Equity Center will be co-hosting Let's Talk Sex, a place mm-hmm. to discuss and ask questions about, you guessed it, sex! Hooray! This month's theme will be focused on the LGBTQIA community, but you don't have to be LGBTQIA to attend. Everyone is welcome to come and participate in the discussion. And as usual, free pizza and condoms.
Every Let's Talk Sex I've been to that you've hosted, non-LGBTQIA people feel so unwelcome, Sean. It's all your fault.
We're working on the diversity. I come from a place of...
You don't
of,
want any of the straight people there, do you?
I come from a place of gay privilege, what can I say? And then Cal Poly's Gender Equity Center is hosting the 11th annual production of the Vagina Monologues. Come see this classic piece of theater as they present to you comedic and entertaining monologues from women of all walks of life. Tickets are now on sale for February 14th and Saturday, February 15th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, February 16th at 3 p.m. at the Performing Arts Center Pavilion. All proceeds will go to the Ending Violence Against Women and Girls Locally and Globally. That was a mouthful.
That is a great show.
It's
and
a
you
lot
should
of fun.
Come just for the first scene where you learn all the different words for vagina.
It's amazing.
And they're just like shouting them out.
Yeah, my favorite, coochie snorcher.
That's a good one. That's a good right? monologue. They're all good.
One. Yeah.
And yeah, I've gone for like two years running now.
Can I do my shameless plug too? It might conflict with
the only thing is you can't tell them that they have to go or
oh no, they
just
totally
be like
don't
this is happening.
This is happening on January 22nd. Central Coast Polyamory is hosting a workshop from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Gala Center on Palm Street.
Whoa.
And it's about jealousy and how to manage it and how to understand it in a different way so that maybe someday you can understand compersion.
Compersion?
Compersion?
Yes, sirs.
Both of us sound so confused.
Would you like to know?
What is compersion?
Compersion is kind of like the opposite of jealousy, right? We had to make up a word. They had to make up a word. So this funky commune in San Francisco called the Kiresta Commune made up a word, compersion, to mean the feeling of joy you get when you see your partner getting joy from being with their partner.
Ah.
Who is not you, right?
Wow.
Mind blowing, San Francisco.
Yeah.
That's cool. I can get on board with that.
Yeah.
So
that sounds like a very interesting feeling.
It is an interesting feeling. Yeah.
So I think, like, you know, that's a good segue into just talking about jealousy and compersion.
Mm-hmm.
Word of the night.
Can we be like Pee Wee's Playhouse?
Yeah.
Everyone scream when we say compersion.
So how exactly do relationships, or how does jealousy form in relationships, whether it's monogamous or polyamorous? Like, where does jealousy begin?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, we've got this conception that it's just jealousy, right? We don't ever break it down. And there's this cultural, shoot, I didn't bring my jealousy slides. I have a whole like presentation on jealousy. So there's this conception that we are trained in our society to become enraged when certain things happen, right? If our partner cheats on us, we're supposed mm-hmm. to be jealous. If they talk to someone else, we're supposed to be jealous. I mean, this is reinforced in movies and songs and, you know, all the time, everywhere. But really what jealousy, like any emotion, is trying to tell us is that we have a need that is not being met or is being threatened. So, for instance, one of the needs underneath jealousy is a fear that your loved one will leave, that they will prefer the other person over you and leave. And this really, I think, comes from a very monogamous mindset, too, that you can't have both. It's one or the other. So there's one. The other is feelings of inadequacy, right? The other person's better than me. It might be feeling left out. Well, they're having all the fun and I don't get to, or what else? I'm trying to think. There's like five or six different kinds. And of course, I don't have my cheat sheet to remind me. I know. But there's a book called Polyamory in the 21st Century that has a great chapter. It's by Deborah Annapole. She's got a great chapter outlining jealousy. But really, it's at the core a fear that your loved one is going to go away.
So and it's so, not really anger or...
No, but there's
fear leads to hate. fear leads to anger.
Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to the dark side. I'm really bad at quoting movies, so I probably got that wrong.
It's okay.
Okay. But there is... there's this whole psychological explanation for it where there's a deep desire to keep your loved one. I mean, there are laws on the books that where crimes of passion are excusable, meaning if a man or a woman catches their partner cheating and kills them, that's okay because it's a crime of passion. Like, this is this is how strong jealousy is and how sanctioned it is by our culture. I think that's kind of not okay.
But
I'll stop to that. I agree.
Yeah.
But jealousy is almost a natural reaction. Like, there is this, there seems to be from my side, or mm-hmm. at least from what I feel, like there's this natural thought process to like saying, why don't you feel like I'm satisfying your needs,
right?
Or like, why am I not good enough? Of mm-hmm. course, that's very flawed.
Right.
But at the core of it, it seems like it's very personal mm-hmm. and it's very on the individual. Like, the onus rests on the person who is jealous, right? Not on the other person.
Right. Well, I like to think in relationship, it's always about two people. So it's never one person only, right? Mm-hmm. And in a way, the person who is feeling jealousy ultimately needs to deal with their feelings of jealousy and shift it. But they can ask for help from their partner too. So for instance, say you're feeling like, why am I not enough? You know, why do you need this other person? You can ask your partner for reassurance about why they love you. You know, or if you're like, oh, they're going on a date with this other person and I'm feeling left out. Make sure you schedule date time with your partner or go out with your other partner while your partner's on a date. So there's a way that you can, or maybe you just need a hug. You're like sad that you're not going to get cuddles tonight and you want cuddles, you know. So there's a way that yes, you have to manage your jealousy. So yeah, hug it out, shake it out. Whatever, masturbate it out. I mean, whatever is going to work for
Never
you.
Never a bad option.
Right, when in doubt, masturbate it out.
Or Netflix, you know.
Right.
If you're not feeling it.
Right.
Netflix some dirty anime.
So, you know, how can we, as lovers or mm-hmm. partners, take our jealousy and make it into something constructive?
Yeah. Well, I think the number one thing to do is recognize that you're having jealousy. And name it. I'm feeling jealous, right? And then the step under that is, okay, what is the need that's not being met? What is my fear? So acknowledge that fear. Then work with yourself. So there's a visceral emotional reaction that happens. It's physiological, right? It's a threat. We're going to fight, flight, or play dead in this situation. So part of really any strong emotion is learning how to regulate your physiology. And there's actually, this is part of what I'll be doing in the workshop, like phobias or other anxieties, you can train yourself not to feel anxious when you are presented with a anxiety-provoking stimuli. So you create, first you learn how to relax. Does anyone at Cal Poly know how to relax?
I'm
going to be one of those people who says, I do not know how to relax.
No, I think maybe in that split second of orgasm, you're relaxed. And then after that, you're not relaxed anymore. So maybe people get like
need more orgasms. It sounds like
5 seconds, 5 seconds or maybe the afterglow, whatever. So first of all, it's learning how to relax your physiological state, get your heart rate back down. And that's deep breathing. That is exercising. That is dancing to your favorite song, but really taking nice deep breaths, getting back to baseline. But then what you do is you create what's called a hierarchy of feared situations. So you take your least anxiety provoking situation, like your partner's talking to someone, mm-hmm. and maybe your most anxiety provoking situation. They just had the best date of and sex of their life with this other person, right? And what you do is starting at the bottom, you visualize it in your mind, feel your anxiety go up, and then bring it down. So you're holding both a state of relaxation and the state of anxiety together at the same time. And the relaxation will override it. And you just keep going up the scale until you're able to calm yourself down when you visualize the most jealousy provoking situation. You know, and you can do this with tests or fear of heights or whatever. One of my professors in college, he's like, I know we could never do this as psychologists, obviously, but you could do this at home, folks. Is sex is one of those other times when we're completely relaxed and that pleasure of that overrides any fear. So go ahead and think about that feared situation and then have yourself some nice sex. Pretty soon you won't be afraid anymore.
Best solution.
So we have a methodology on that.
It's being developed. It's in development.
Sounds like we need to make it our senior project.
Perfect.
I'm no psych student though.
But basically, we learn by watching other people's reactions. So I have a friend who swears he has never felt jealous. He grew up with polyamorous parents in a polyamorous setting. And so we see jealousy modeled by our parents, by other adults. And again, songs, movies. I mean, how many of them are about this? Like, I listen to, Latin music, and that's like every song is about jealousy or the one. And American music, too. Now I want to sing Rihanna. Never mind. Yeah, anyway.
I hear Rihanna at the rec center all the time, so it's probably... Oh, there you go.
Oh, I couldn't hold it in. Okay.
Dang it.
I know.
But doesn't it feel nice to feel... All right, so playing devil's advocate.
Please.
Doesn't it feel nice to be the only one for somebody else?
It does.
Isn't
feel
there
special.
Like that nice little bit of selfishness that you can have to yourself?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. I am the king, queen, zine of the world.
Oh, yeah. It does feel nice to have that someone thinks I am the most special. But imagine for a moment if you had two people who thought you were the most special.
Oh, snap.
Oh.
Or three. You know? So this is one of the reasons people are polyamorous, right? It feels good to be loved. It feels good to be loved by more than one person. You know, there's a way that when we interact with people, you've probably experienced this, that we're all very complex. Well, most of us, and people at Cal Poly probably are, because you like to think and do things. But when we interact with different people, different parts of ourselves get to be expressed. And so by interacting with lots of different people on deeper or different levels, you get to learn more about yourself. Wow.
All right. Well, I'm Groovy. Glad you're able to answer that for
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
I think that's a good place to move on to another song.
Maybe? Are we going to play the song I think we're going
to
play?
Well, I haven't queued it up, so I'm going to ask you to type it while I talk.
Oh, okay. Kill some time, Sean.
So,
you know, I can give you a couple other definitions. So if you are talking to polyamorous people, you know some of their acronyms. Because I hate acronyms when I don't know what they mean.
Yeah.
So one of them, my very favorite, is NRE. Not to be confused with the NRA.
Yeah.
NRE is New Relationship Energy. You know it. You love it when you meet that new person. They're so sparkly. They're so shiny. Your like heart is racing every time you see them, and you just, you can't get enough. Lovely. And a lot of people who are polyamorous, they like that. You know, you get in a relationship with someone for a while, you pass that honeymoon period, and it becomes very sweet and nice. You can go really deep with them, but it's not that shiny, sparkly anymore.
Yeah.
You know? And so there's a way you can recapture that shiny, sparkly feeling with someone new. And then guess what? Bring it home to your other lover too. You know, so there's a way to capture that. And I have friends who do this. They call it a flirtationship. Right. So they're not actually having sex with other people, but they'll flirt, like shamelessly flirt, and maybe hug and maybe kiss, and then use all that lovely energy they've built up with this other person to have fabulous sex with their partner.
That's really interesting. I think that's cool.
Yeah. And so there's a way that we can play with it, that when you're jealous or possessive of a partner and you're just like, no, don't look. Okay. So what do we do when someone says, don't look? We look. When they say, you can't have that. What do we want to do? We want to have it. Right? So if you just acknowledge it's there and you play with it. Whoa, that person's really hot. Oh my God, they're so hot. Then take it home. Take that energy home with your partner. Right.
All right.
Yeah.
So remember, it's 805-756-5277, 805-SLOW-KCPR.
We're waiting. We hope you have questions.
Please.
Ask me.
Please. Please do that.
I want to answer.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mambo number 5. Around the corner, the boys say they want some gin and juice, but I really don't wanna be a buzz like I had last week. I must stay deep, cause talk is cheap. I like Angela, Pamela, Sandra, and Rita, and as I continue, you know they're getting sweeter. So what can I do? I really bag you, my lord. To me, flirting is just like a sport. Anything fly, it's all good. Let me jump in, please sing in the trumpet. A little bit of Monica in my life. A little bit of Erica by my side. A little bit of Rita's all I need. A little bit of Tina's what I see. A little bit of Sandra.
Sandra in the sun. A little bit of Mary all night long. A little bit of Jessica, here I am. A little bit of you makes me your man. Mambo number five. Jump up and down and move it all around. Shake your head to the sound, put your hands on the ground. Take one step left and one step right. One to the front and one to the side. Clap your hands once and clap your hands twice. And if it looks like this, then you're doing it. A little bit of Monica in my life. A little bit of Erica by my side. A little bit of Rita's all I need. A little bit of Tina's what I see. A little bit of Sandra in the sun. A little bit of Mary all night long. A little bit of Jessica, here I am. A little bit of you makes me your man. A little bit of Monica in my life. A little bit of Erica by my side. A little bit of Rita's all I need. A little bit of Tina's what I see. A little bit of Sandra in the sun. A little bit of Mary all night long. A little bit of Jessica, here I am. A little bit of you makes me your man.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Hi.
Yay. Here with Dr. Peace.
Hello.
Fun guest.
Yes.
So, did we get some questions over the...
I got one question. So, my friend asked, is polyamory a sexuality or is it a stage in a person's relationship?
Sure. So, yes.
Yes.
And so, let me explain. So... polyamory is a relationship style, you know, so it's a way of relating among many ways of relating. You know, the default is monogamous. We're not taught of any other way to relate besides monogamy. So it's a different way of relating, you know. Legally, there is a whole interesting, right now there are no legal protections at all for polyamorous people mm-hmm. or polyamorous families, especially. Although that changed a little bit in California, and maybe we can talk about that in a second. So legally, a law student wrote a white paper, whatever they're called in legalese, about making polyamory a sexual orientation so that it can be protected under the law. So there's an argument that legally it could be classified as a sexual orientation, but I think that... practically speaking, it's not a sexual orientation. It's a way of relating, a relationship style.
Okay.
So yes, it's both, depending on your perspective.
All right.
And then we had a question about families. Did you want to, what was the question again?
Sure.
We have
another DJ at the station. Just grab that mic.
Yeah.
My question was, how would being polyamorous work in a family function, and mm-hmm. what effect might that have on a child who's surrounded by monogamous parents?
Sure. So they, you know, the adage, it takes a village to raise a child. I was actually raised by my whole family. I had a single parent, and like aunties, uncles, grandparents all took part in raising me. So imagine that scenario with a child or children who have more than two parents, right? Parent A and B want to go to the movies for the night. Parent C stays home with the child and babysits. Boom, built-in babysitter. A lot of polyamorous people I know too have chosen families, or oftentimes a wide network of friends. So there's a lot of adults around willing to help out. So in a way, the child has a lot of different adults loving and caring for them. Prejudice happens. You know, I've definitely heard cases of, the very monogamous people at school found out that their kid was playing with, you know, a kid of polyamorous people, and now they're no longer allowed to go over to the house. Okay. They were having a good time. You know, everything was good. They had plenty of adult supervision. So interestingly, a lot of people, because there are no ways to marry more than one person when they're creating families, do it in creative ways. So I actually just saw an article online where a couple was married. She wanted a baby. He didn't. They're polyamorous. She found another lover and had a baby with the other lover. So the three parents live in the house together. The people who are not married have a child together. New law in California states that more than two people can be legal guardians for children. So I think this law was probably created for step parents. I need to do a little more research. But polyamorous people are very excited about this law, because that means that people, like in that scenario, or just secondary or primary partners who are in a triad, that other person can be the legal guardian and can pick them up from school without problems, or take them to the hospital, you know, or care for them like a parent, that they're already doing, and the law will support that. So pretty exciting stuff.
Huh.
Yeah.
So you've been constantly saying like, polyamorous people, like, mm-hmm. And we talked briefly before the show about how polyamorous couple implies this binary, mm-hmm. which doesn't really reflect what polyamory is.
Sure.
So what exactly is the correct term for?
Sure. Well, this kind of goes back to the discussion too, that every polyamorous person does it differently. Mm-hmm. And so for a lot of people, they start out married and open the marriage up. Mm-hmm. So in a way, it can be a polyamorous couple where that they're the primary relationship. So they live together, they share finances, they've committed to being together in the long term. Mm-hmm. And they may bring in other partners, either as sexual partners or partners who, you know, they love but don't live with them. So that we're talking about a primary secondary relationship or tertiary. So two people are married, you know, one of them has another partner. That's the secondary partner.
Gotcha.
Some married couples might have a monopoly relationship where one person in the couple is perfectly happy. They don't need a lot of sex or their needs are getting met, but the other person's aren't. So they're like, okay, go off and get your needs met. So one person has multiple partners and the other person doesn't. This really freaks people out because it's like, that's not fair. And when I think about fairness and equality within polyamorous relationships, it's about, are your needs getting met? Everyone has different needs. Everyone gets them met differently. So it's not a 50-50 equal reciprocity thing. So again, that's a paradigm shift. Some people form a triad or an erotic triangle where everyone has sex with everyone. So there's three people relating together. They might live together and then they all have sex with one another, sometimes group sex or, you know, two on two in different configurations. Then there's a term called polyfidelity, where there's multiple people who may or may not all have sex together, but they've decided that it's just going to be those people that they're relating to sexually.
Huh.
Yeah. So it's kind of like marriage with more than one person. So polyfidelity.
Okay.
And then there's also solo polyamory, where a person's primary partner is themselves or their career or whatever. They don't want a partner on a daily basis, but they want people in their lives who they love, who they have sex with, who they have companionship with, without all the trappings of a live-in partner.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
It's all really cool. It's all stuff I'm not really familiar with, so.
Yeah.
I think, like, one final question from me is, like, you spoke briefly or earlier that without sex, a relationship just kind of boils down to really good friends. How do you think, like, do you think that's problematic for relationships? Like, for example, if I'm trying to relate to someone romantically, but they are not interested in having sex, do you think that we would be classified as really good friends that just don't happen to have sex, despite the fact that we have, like, really deep emotional, romantic connections without that physical intimacy?
Right. And so this, again, comes to the three, you know, components of relationships: sex, intimacy, romance. Yeah, you can have romance and love with someone and cuddles and all that good stuff without the sex part. People do consider that polyamorous. So it's one of those people, some people do, some people don't.
Huh.
Yeah. So this is where that you've got to ask the person who says they're polyamorous.
Right.
Because some people will really, let me back up. For a lot of people who are polyamorous, they value the friendship and the love more than the sex. So say they've been relating, they're sexual, and for whatever reason, the sex isn't happening anymore. They will very likely continue to be good friends. They might start having sex again 10 years down the road. You know, so the door's open, even if you're not walking through it at this time, because the relationship is what is valued.
Gotcha.
So there's a commitment for a lot of people of maintaining that connection and that relationship, whether or not you have sex, whether or not you're in the same town even, you know.
All right.
Yeah.
So I guess kind of on a parting note, what advice would you give perhaps for people who are unsure if they're maybe polyamorous or want to go down the road of discovery to see if they are or not?
Sure. I'm actually writing a quiz, like a Cosmo-style quiz right now of are you polyamorous? So I'll share that with you.
I'll take it.
Yeah, right?
Let's find out.
I say, you know, why not? Try it out. But you really need to, again, get clear on what you need. Really work on that honest communication. Know that it's going to be hard. It's not easy. There's going to be, you know, talking and tears and then all those great juicy moments too. And, you know, I have a good number of clients who have come in because they've cheated on a partner, because they've fallen in love with someone else. You know, some people just have so much love in their heart, they can't love just one person. And they're feeling guilty and they're feeling terrible for having sex with someone else. And I'm like, for those people especially, I'm like, have you considered that maybe you can do this and do it honestly and get the consent of the other partner? Other partners may not want it, but you might break up anyway over the cheating, right? Yeah, so part of it is just get comfortable talking about your desire for others and your need if you have a partner. And once you have that open dialogue, taking the next step to, what if we actually tried this? And you can totally set up rules and boundaries. You know, maybe it's you can make out with other people or you can have oral sex with someone, but no penetrative sex. That's a common one for couples to kind of keep it safe as they're experimenting. So you can set up ground rules, you know, no touching below the belt, maybe. So you can negotiate what feels safe and not comfortable and not with your partner if you're wanting to open up and explore with other people.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And I just want to make a plug for a couple of really great books if you want more information about polyamory. Probably the most referenced and is kind of called The Bible of Polyamory, which is so irreverent. I love it. It's called The Ethical Slut.
I've actually heard of that.
Yeah, Dossie Easton and Janet Hardy. Another great one more recently is Tristan Taramino wrote Opening Up. It's a great one. Sex at Dawn, for you biology folks, gives a very compelling biological argument as to that humans have never actually been monogamous. We have taken our social institution of monogamy and put it on the animal kingdom. We now know that there's like two species in the whole world who are monogamous. And before we thought there was a whole bunch. So there's a way that our cultural lens of the world is not objective.
Well, then.
Fancy that.
I know, right? Okay. That was very subversive of me. Sorry, all you scientists out there.
All right. Well, I think that's pretty much all we got time for.
It's 11:01.
Yeah, it's okay. DJ Bleach can wait a little bit. I'm sorry.
Cool.
All right. Cool. So.
Thank you so much for coming on.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
We hope that you all had an enlightened experience with us here at KCPR. And tune in next week for who knows what.
A crazy adventure with one of our next guest speakers who says he runs a camp on, what was it? It was kind of like just exploring your sexuality.
Yeah.
Like being comfortable with it.
Nice. Yeah, there's lots of sex positive speakers and events going on in town. It's kind of an underground little network, like everything in this town that's sex positive and sexy. You got to just kind of know.
Secret password.
Right. The secret handshake for all those sex positive people. We're here. We exist. Okay. Dr. Sandy Peace on Facebook will help you find some of them. There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as usual, come to the Gender Equity Center. We love talking about sex.
Especially when it distracts us from our other work we have to do.
Yeah, like filing room requests. So thank you again for tuning in. We'll see you next week from 10 to 11. And as usual, stay sexy.
Ask me for advice, I said use the door. But you're still clinging to somebody you deplore. And now you want to use me for emotional blackmail. I just feel pity when you lie, contempt when you cry. Baby, leave it out.